Our next guest is also going all in on AI. His company just crossed $1 billion in annual revenue and still says there's a lot more opportunity ahead from where we're joined by Aaron Levy, CEO and co-founder of Box. Aaron, thank you for making the trip.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you have been in D.C.
Yes.
This week, right?
Yeah.
And you often talk to the regulators about sort of plans for AI. Obviously, you're as excited about anyone as the possibilities and the opportunity.
Yeah.
What is the risk of regulation? What did they tell you this week? Are you more or less optimistic that our own regulators have the right tools and the right aims here?
Yeah. So most of the conversations were with Congress. Obviously, you know, those in Congress trying to figure out where do we take AI regulation and what are the possible laws that we need to enact. Let me just TLDR it first. I'm actually very optimistic based on the conversations that I was involved in this week. I think we have a Congress that, while obviously many dimensions of it can be dysfunctional, I think there's a lot of productive conversation happening around AI, and one that is actually taking a very optimistic tone. The conversations are about the improvements in healthcare, in logistics, and education that AI can offer. Mm-hmm. And so there's a sort of general understanding that you don't want to over-clamp down on this. You don't want to over-regulate to the point where you could actually limit the progress that we can now see with AI. So I think it's actually a really great time to be having this conversation. It's a very productive dialogue. And I'm optimistic that we will not see sort of over-regulation in this space right now.
And we've talked about this in the past, the idea that regulation should be handed down by, you know, Washington itself, or you let industries regulate themselves, like you have a regulator in the financial services industry, et cetera. Are you optimistic that it will roll out that way, or that you're going to get Congress people sort of trying to hand down blanket regulation?
I think the general momentum, is increasingly that there's a lot of regulation already on the books around how we should deal with financial services and how we should deal with logistics and how we should deal with transportation. Mm-hmm. And that each of those agencies and the regulators around those industries are in a better position to understand the impact of AI than having some wholesale regulation about AI generally. I think the risk that we were starting to talk about last year that I was very nervous about is sort of wholesale regulation on AI, which is, you know, we have to limit the performance of these models. We have to limit how many GPUs you can have in a cluster. That made no sense because we're way too early in the technology curve to be slowing down the rate of progress in AI right now.
You and I have talked a lot about the idea of job creation and AI or job loss. I want to play a soundbite for you from Larry Fink this morning, and I'll get you to respond on the back.
They're going to create new jobs, too. Think about all the needs for building out data centers and management. It's going to reshape our jobs. Let's be clear. Think about all the jobs that have been lost in society, whether telephone operators, even from, you know, there's so many jobs that have been eliminated, but we have 3.7 unemployment. Over time, we create new jobs. And unfortunately, there's a timing differential. And in many cases, a geographic differential.
So a lot of people, when they think about AI, they hear either new jobs or they hear a loss of jobs, job destruction.
Yeah.
I think the most important word he said was reshape, right? It's going to be different. This is something that you've talked about. When do we get that? Because it feels like even at the beginning of this year, we've seen even white-collar jobs, a lot of jobs lost at the likes of Google and Duolingo and some other tech companies. So how do you think that this evolves?
Well, to be clear, those jobs that maybe were lost really had nothing to do with AI.
Duolingo, for example, did call out.
There might be AI that is sort of disruptive to a particular product that a company is offering, which could cause them to maybe not need as much. There might not be as much demand for a service. I'm not as familiar with that particular cut. But in general, the losses of the past year or so were just companies that honestly overhired for the growth rates. I think the real impact of AI, it's actually almost better to think about it at a micro basis than a macro basis. Because the macro basis, you sort of say, how many people are in this particular part of labor and what happens to those jobs if AI kind of ran through it? It's actually better to look at it at more of a company level. If a company can make their salespeople more productive or their engineers more productive, then what's going to happen is those companies will actually have a greater demand for the services of those salespeople or those engineers. If I could make, you know, every salesperson inside of an organization 10% more productive, which means they can sell, you know, 10% more in terms of services for the same cost, we're going to hire more salespeople. We're not going to hire fewer salespeople. So when AI is actually used as a co-pilot or a way of augmenting the capabilities of an employee, you're going to actually see that the productivity of that particular function goes up, right, which means the demand for it will go up. There might be some movement of jobs in that process, you know, in different parts of labor, but in a general basis, productivity, you know, almost always inevitably creates more jobs in the economy.
Right. So net new jobs eventually, at least.
Net new jobs, and even the ones that are in current kind of classified domains that you already are investing in.
Last question for you. Yeah. As CEO of Box, you work with all the hyperscalers and you see what they're developing. And one of the big themes we talk about at CNBC these days is the role of Google, right? And the innovator's dilemma that it is facing right now. Does it disrupt search in order to provide more generative AI to its customers?
Yeah.
Or does it hold on to search, its cash cow? What's your view?
I think, I think first of all, Google is in a position where they really have to kind of drive an evolution and a transition of the user base over time, from the sort of, you know, typing in a single query into a search box to typing in a question and getting either a set of answers or decisions or even actions that Google's taking. That will take some time because even us as consumers are taking some time to adapt to this new technology. I think Google's in an incredibly strong spot to drive that transition. And then as a technology provider in the AI sort of hyperscaler cloud infrastructure wars, they're an incredible partner as well. So with Box, we have a service called Box AI. We connect to different models from different AI providers, including OpenAI and Google, and we find their technology to be extremely strong. Hmm. Our customers are clamoring for these types of use cases around how do they work with their data. Google is one of our strongest partners in this space.
So basically, do not count them out.
Absolutely not. It would be a mistake.
Yeah.
So I spent a little time on Sand Hill Road this week. That is the epicenter of venture. The Fed does seem to be in focus there again. You don't often hear VCs talking about economic data since their companies aren't priced daily like stocks, but CPI did catch the attention of a few. One person told me they're now checking things like oil prices to see what it all means for the Fed. One big reason they care, what you guys were just talking about, the IPO window. Aside from some listings, what I'm hearing is it's still seen as a tough time to go public. IPOs are how these private investors cash out and then return money to their investors. So endowments, pension funds, for example. Many are watching Rubrik, which is an upcoming software IPO as a bellwether. Rates can also have an effect on what their startups are worth at this point. Multiples were slashed dramatically when the Fed first started tightening. Some have already, quote, taken the pill, as one investor told me. They found more cost discipline or just folded if they don't see any sort of path to profitability. Jack Abraham of Atomic telling me all this affects the sentiment of limited partners, those LPs, and how much they're going to be able to invest back into future venture funds. It dulls the attractiveness of the sector. If a pension fund can get a risk-free 5% on a treasury bill, for example, it's going to make venture a lot less enticing. That is pushing out expectations for one. When some can raise their next fund, it's going to be especially tough for those first-time funds that raised and then deployed money. The 2021 peak. Tiger Global has been a cautionary tale people talk about a lot, reportedly raised about $2 billion for its latest fund. It sounds like a big number, but it's about a third of what the $6 billion target was initially. It did raise a $12 billion fund at the peak in 2021. That was peak zero interest rates, ZERP era, as it's also known. Rates do have an impact on where they're going to be spending. One person described it as a tale of two cities. AI town is booming while rate-sensitive town, fintech, real estate, not doing so well. Another investor, Matt Murphy, over at Menlo Ventures, used the analogy of surfing. He said AI is a wave right now. Investors just want to ride the wave. They're not worried about possible reef or anything below. A different investor tells me 95% of pitch decks out there are highlighting AI in the first three slides. Another told me recently they're encouraging their startups to change their company names to .AI if they're struggling to raise money, guys.
It seems ridiculous. I guess they just now need to figure out the winners from the losers and all of that.
I think that's right. And that's really the venture model. They expect, you know, 9 out of 10 of these companies to fail. They're really looking for that big 20, 50, 100x return. They're okay with losing 1x their money. They expect a lot of these companies to fail. They do not want to miss out on that big swing, which is really the model. It's long only. There's no hedging in venture. Yeah. And that's why you see some of the FOMO out here that you don't get to the same extent in other markets.